Property taxation. One of the big topics in property taxation will be basis. And basis is basically what you have in the asset that isn't taxable when you sell it. That's kind of a layman's term for, or layman's explanation for basis. Easily understood. It's what you have in the asset that isn't taxable. And we're going to cover the basis and holding periods for assets purchased, received as inheritance, and received as a gift, and then converted from personal use to business use. So beginning with the basis and holding period of an asset purchased, take the cost of the purchase, add any debt assumed. So if you took on any debt, add any other expenses, add capital improvements, and that's the basis of the asset purchased. And the holding period is the date of acquisition until the date of sale. Then you have an asset received as an inheritance, and your basis is the fair market value on the date of the original owner's death. So the person who gave you the asset through their estate, it's the fair market value of the basis is the fair market value of the asset on their date, unless they choose the alternate valuation date, which is typically 6 months after the date of death, or if it's sold in between the date of death and the alternate valuation date. The alternate valuation date can also be somewhere in between when it's actually sold. And so that's the basis, fair market value, date of death, or alternate valuation date, or date of sale if before the alternate valuation date. And I always picture like this timeline, kind of like a ruler. You have the date of death on the left, and then you have the alternate valuation date, which is 6 months later on the right. But if it's sold in between the two dates and the alternate valuation date is chosen, then that's what you use. The holding period for an asset received as inheritance is always long-term, which is good for you because you want it to be a long-term asset when you sell it for a long-term capital gain, rather, if you sell it. Then you have the basis and holding period of assets received as a gift. A couple scenarios here. If on the date of the gift, the basis is less than the fair market value, then use the donor's carryover basis and the donor's carryover period, holding period. If the basis is on the date of the gift is greater than the sales price, but the sales price is greater than the fair market value at the date of the gift, then the basis is the sales price. And you use the donor's carryover holding period. If the basis is greater than the fair market value, which is greater than the sales price, then use the fair market value at the date of the gift. And again, using then you use the donee's holding period, which is the person receiving the gift. Then assets converted from personal use to business use. You have a business, going to use your assets that were formerly personal use, but now you're going to use them to generate money. So they're converting from personal use to business use. Well, you have to come up with a basis. So the basis is the lower of the adjusted basis of the asset or the fair market value of the asset on the date of the conversion, and the holding period begins from the date the asset was acquired for personal use. Capital gains and losses. To calculate a capital gain or loss, you take the proceeds minus the adjusted basis of the asset sold, giving you your capital gain or loss realized. So proceeds is cash received plus property received, fair market value, services received, fair market value, plus cancellation of any debt, because if you get any debt canceled, that counts as a proceed, plus selling expenses. So those are proceeds minus the adjusted basis of the assets sold, giving you your capital gain or loss. This is where holding period comes into play. If the holding period is greater than a year, it's a long-term capital gain or loss. That's what you want. It has a more favorable tax treatment. Capital gain rates are typically more favorable than ordinary income. So you want to pay a capital gain at a capital gain rate, not your ordinary income rate. If the holding period is less than a year, then you have a short-term capital gain or loss, which gets the unfavorable tax treatment, and you pay taxes using your ordinary tax rate. So then there's a process of netting capital gains and losses, and this gets a little bit complicated. This is for individuals and corporations. And there's some tables here I'm going to go over. You might want to look at the ninja notes on this section, especially when we get to step two here. So step one is you net short-term gains and losses together, and you net long-term gains and losses together. So short-term capital gain minus short-term capital loss gives you a net short-term capital gain or a net short-term capital loss. So it's either a plus or a minus sign. Then you take your long-term capital gain minus your long-term capital losses, giving you a net long-term capital gain or a net long-term capital loss, plus or minus sign. Then we have step two. If you have a net short-term capital gain and a net long-term capital loss, then you have a net short-term capital gain. If you have a net short-term capital loss and a net long-term capital gain, then you have a net short-term capital loss. If you have a net long-term capital gain and a net short-term capital loss, then you have a net long-term capital gain. If you have a net long-term capital loss and a net short-term capital gain, then you have a net long-term capital loss. This is all pretty confusing. I would highly recommend checking out the ninja notes in this area. It's in page 5 of this chapter on property taxation. So if both are gains or both are losses, do not net them. In this case, you have either a net short-term capital gain and a net long-term capital gain, or a net short-term capital loss and a net long-term capital loss. Let's talk about the tax treatments of capital gains and losses. This is for individuals. If you have a net short-term capital gain, it's taxed at ordinary income tax rates. If you have a net short-term capital loss, then you offset that short-term capital loss from other sources of income up to $3,000 married filing jointly, and you carry the excess forward indefinitely. That's a net short-term capital loss. If it's a net long-term capital gain, then those are taxed at the capital gains rates. If you have a net long-term capital loss, offset that net long-term capital loss from other sources of income up to $3,000 and carry it forward indefinitely. Now, for corporations, if you have a net short-term capital gain, that's taxed at the ordinary corporate income tax rate. If you have a net short-term capital loss, it may be deducted only to the extent of the capital gain during the year and then carried back 3 years and carried forward 5 years. So the excess is carried back 3 years and carried forward 5 years. If you have a net long-term capital gain, that's taxed at the ordinary corporate income tax rate. If you have a net long-term capital loss, that can be deducted only to the extent of capital gains during the year and then carried back 3 years and carried forward 5 years. Now, there are two ways to classify property based on usage and based on category. For property based on usage, you have personal use property, business use property, and investment use property. personal use property, any gains are fully taxable, losses are not deductible. For business use property, you have ordinary income assets and non-current assets. Ordinary income assets, that's inventory, accounts receivable, current assets. For non-current assets, that includes buildings, warehouses, furniture, motor vehicles. So that's, and then investment use property, gains are fully taxable as capital gains, and losses are capital losses. So that's property that's based on usage. If it's based on category, you have personal property and real property. Personal property is anything you can move, like movable property, furniture, trucks, computers, etc. Real property, you can't move it. Land, building. So if you can push it, it's personal. If not, it's real. So let's talk about situations where capital gain is realized but not recognized. So homeowners. The nice thing about the sale of your home is if you sell it at a gain, which happens a lot right now in this environment with high inflation, there's a realized but not recognized gain. You can exclude the gain on the sale of a personal residence up to $500,000 if you're married filing jointly. But if you have a loss on that house, you can't deduct it, but you don't have to pay a gain on it up to $500,000. That's nice. Involuntary conversions. So the gain from an involuntary conversion, property is destroyed. There's no gain if the property is replaced within specific time limits, but losses on destruction of personal property are not deductible. Divorce property, it's not a taxable event. Like-kind exchanges, and you've heard of 1031 exchanges. So the gain or loss on like-kind real assets held for business use or investment use, it's not taxable as long as you do the proper 1031 exchange. With the exception is when boot is received, but this doesn't apply to personal property held for business use or investment use. And personal use assets. Installment sales. So the gain on an installment sale is reported over the period in which the cash payments are received. Stock transactions. So issuances, repurchases, reissues, stock splits, stock dividends. Those are not recognized for tax purposes. So if you have a non-qualified account and you get a stock split or something like that, that's not a taxable event. Or investment in qualified opportunity funds. So capital gains there can be deferred by investing in qualified opportunity funds within specific time limits, and the basis in the fund is reduced by the deferred gain. So those are situations when a capital gain is realized but not recognized. Now, situations when a capital loss is realized but not deductible. Wash sale losses. So this is when you sell a stock at a loss and then buy it again, like pretty fast. Well, then that loss is disallowed. It just gets added to the basis. But any gain is fully taxable. Losses on sale of personal use assets, losses are not deductible. Gains, however, are fully taxable. Related party transactions, they're not deductible, but future gains are not taxable to the extent of previously unrecognized losses, but gains are, but then after that, they're fully taxable. Now a topic that I'm going to cover in TCP, but I'm not going to cover in regulation, is a gain or loss on the sale of 1244 and section 1202 stocks. So section 1244 stocks, the gains are taxed as capital gains and subject to lower income tax rates, and a loss up to $100,000 married filing jointly is treated as an ordinary loss, and the balance is treated as a capital loss. Section 1202 stocks losses are treated as capital losses, and gains on the sale of 1202 stocks will be excluded up to 100%. This final section is going to cover the gain or loss on the sale of business property. So you have business use property, which is ordinary income assets or non-current assets. And again, ordinary income assets are current assets and include inventory and accounts receivable. And the gain or loss on the sale of these is treated as an ordinary gain or loss. So that's ordinary income assets. And then after that, it gets trickier. So non-current assets, and then we're going to drill down into that. So non-current assets include land, buildings, warehouses, furniture, motor vehicles. So obviously current assets are like inventory and accounts receivable. These non-current and things that you're going to like quickly convert into cash through the receipt of money. These non-current assets, land, building, warehouse, furniture, motor vehicles, etc., they're classified two ways. Non-current assets with a holding period of less than 12 months and with a holding period of more than 12 months, which are also known as 1231 assets. You've probably heard that before. 1231, 1245, 1250 assets. This is what we're talking about here. So for non-current assets with a holding period of less than 12 months, these are not classified as 1231 assets. And the gain or loss on the sale of non-current assets with a holding period of less than 12 months are treated as a capital gain or loss. So that's holding period of less than 12 months. Capital gain or loss. Now, holding period of more than 12 months is a 1231 asset. And the gain or loss on the sale of 1231 assets are classified as taxed per section 1245 and the section 1250 provisions. So let's drill down into that. Section 1245 assets, that's personal assets for business use. 1245, property, plant, and equipment, furniture and fixtures, motor vehicles. That's 1245. Section 1250 are real assets for business use. So 1245, personal assets for business use. Section 1250, real assets for business use. So it'd be building, warehouse, other depreciable real assets, not land. You can't depreciate land. You can try. Yes. No. Cannot depreciate land. So 1245, personal assets for business use. 1250, real assets for business use. Just as a CPA, you can just walk in the room and spout off something about 1245 or 1250 assets, just knowing what they are, just make you sound smarter. And then just walk out of the room. All right. So how to calculate the gains and losses on starting with 1245. Again, what are they? Personal assets for business use. Now, 1245 is treated differently between individuals and corporations. We will start with the individuals, gains and losses for individuals. 1245 assets, individuals, gains up to accumulated depreciation is treated as ordinary income. That's the section 1245 recapture. Any excess gain is a capital gain. That's a section 1231 gain. Losses are ordinary losses. That's a section 1231 loss. Again, gains up to accumulated appreciation is ordinary income. It's taxed like ordinary income. It's called a section 1245 recapture. So that was gains up to accumulated appreciation. Beyond that, any excess gain, it's a capital gain, a 1231 gain. If you have losses, it's just a flat ordinary loss, 1231 loss. That's for individuals. Corporations, gains. Gains up to accumulated depreciation. Ordinary income. That's a section 1245 recapture, just like individuals. Excess gains, capital gain, section 1231 gain, just like individuals. Losses, ordinary loss, section 1231 loss, just like individuals. So that's real property. Individuals, gains. Gains up to straight line depreciation, taxed at 25%, which is unrecaptured section 1250. Gains up to accumulated depreciation in excess of the straight line depreciation. Ordinary income, section 1250 recapture. Excess gains, capital gain, section 1231 gain. Losses, ordinary loss, section 1231 loss. That's individuals. Let me go over that one more time. Gains up to straight line, tax at 25%. That's the unrecaptured section 1250. Gains up to accumulated depreciation in excess of straight line. Ordinary income, section 1250 recapture. Excess gain, capital gain, section 1231 gain. Losses, ordinary loss, section 1231 loss. Corporations, gains. Gains up to depreciation in excess of straight line. Ordinary income, section 1250 recapture. And then 20% of 1245 ordinary income minus 1250 ordinary income is ordinary income, which is a section 290 recapture. As my high school algebra teacher used to say, this is getting a little hairy. We always used to laugh at that. Excess gain, capital gain, section 1231 gain. This table is in your ninja notes on page 11. It's at the end of the chapter. I'd probably just look at it. Excess gain, capital gain, section 1231 gain. Losses, ordinary loss, section 1231 loss. This includes property taxation.